Hello, everyone, and welcome to Note to Scene, a music news podcast covering everything from pop punk to metalcore. I'm Matt Crane.
I'm Tyler Sharp.
And welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen, where every week we discuss all the biggest news stories in the music scene. Find more episodes of this show on Apple Podcasts, where you should please rate and review us. Email us at notetoscene@gmail.com. So much to talk about this week. Big news from Blink-182 and The Word Alive. But first, we're going to talk about pop punk heroes State Champs, who just announced their third album. Can they save pop punk? Could anyone? Let's find out. So, Avicii, dead at 28. This is crazy and terrible news. You know, last I saw his family flown out to Oman, where he died on the Arabian Peninsula, just to figure out, like, what the hell happened.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was only 28. It's really sad.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it when I saw the report. Totally blindsided, and I know a lot of music in general, the industry in general, was blindsided by it, but definitely, like, Avicii was so massive to EDM and even crossover into pop music for a while there.
Absolutely. Like, I remember a time, you know, like when he was just another one of the hot DJs, like Skrillex or Deadmau5.
Right.
And the Levels got so big and became like a staple in all the dance clubs. Like, when I was in college, Levels was just always on the club.
Mm-hmm.
And Flo Rida jumped on the song, and that was that. You know what
yep.
I mean? It was huge. And then Wake Me Up. That song is just an undeniable hit. It was so huge. It was everywhere, you know? And I mean, I got sick of it at some point, but it was fucking huge, man. And it was an inspirational song.
Yeah.
He's definitely on the Mount Rushmore of EDM DJs.
Absolutely.
You know, he was one of the biggest.
When he was still touring, he was always on the Forbes end of year
list.
Oh,
yeah.
You know,
he
for
made
highest
like
paid DJs.
$28 million when he was 24, I think, in 1 year.
Just unreal.
Unreal
the impact he had. And I think it's definitely like, he's definitely underrated.
Yeah, he really was one of those forces that like helped build this modern EDM LED festival touring machine. Like, that was him, you know. He helped
totally
build that.
A
He,
precursor for sure.
Yeah, and he broke, you know, out into mainstream pop in a way that those other EDM DJs like Skrillex and Deadmau5 never really did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of
totally
paved the way for guys like Zedd and Calvin Harris to dominate the way they do now.
Absolutely. Yeah, so sad. I couldn't believe it.
Definitely. So, you know, RIP Avicii.
Absolutely.
It's just a tragedy. But we got to move on. We got some listener questions we have to get into for this week. Our first email comes in from listener Kimberly G, who writes into notetoscene@gmail.com. Kimberly says, "Hey, guys, I just discovered your podcast about a week ago from stalking Spencer Chamberlain's Twitter, and I've been listening to all of the old episodes ever since. I wish I discovered it sooner. I'm a long-term emo post-hardcore fan, and I love hearing about all my favorite bands. I've also discovered Falling in Reverse from your podcast. I don't know what rock I've been living under. I listened to Losing My Mind upon your recommendation and went back from there. I also discovered other great bands like Drugs and Neck Deep. When I'm not discovering new bands, I've been going back and listening to Let It Unfold You, Dear Diary, They're Only Chasing Safety, Define the Great Line, Discovering Waterfront, and so many more. I just wanted to say a big thanks and let you know that you've got a listener all the way in Australia. Keep up the good work, Kimberly." So we actually have a lot of Australian listeners, and
hell
I love
yeah.
them particularly because they always write in and they always rep.
No.
They're always so enthusiastic. Like, the same way, like, Australian music fans are with bands. You know, anytime, like, a band announces a tour, the first thing you see in the comments is, "Come to Australia." Like, our listeners in Australia are always, like, super enthusiastic about the podcast. They're always, like, you know, anytime we put out an episode, they're like, "Shouts from Australia."
Yeah, hell yeah.
I love
Hard
it.
Rep. That's so, that shit just warms my heart, man. Like, it,
yeah.
That was the goal, you know, when we started this thing, was just to give people a place, give listeners and fans and everyone else a place to just discuss this music that we all love. So, and the fact that people are just discovering new bands from this, like,
yeah.
Hell yeah. That's awesome.
I mean, holy shit, like, discover, like, if we're putting you on Drugs and Neck Deep and, like, Chasing Safe, like, go, fuck, hell yeah, like,
right?
Keep discovering. Like, I didn't
Absolutely.
Even intend for that, you know, from this show, but if that's happening, that's great. Also, like, Shouts to all like the Spencer Chamberlain stalkers out there, you know. Tyler, when does that like when do you people have your meetings? Yep.
Like, what the? Every third Monday of every month.
Okay. Just gotta get that on tape. Okay. Yeah. We get so many nice little notes like that. It's so awesome.
Absolutely.
Our next question comes in from listener Alex. Alex writes, "Hey guys, love the podcast. When you're listening to a new album for the first time, what sort of setting do you do it in? Are you listening only to the album or doing other things like driving or working?" I think this is a really interesting question because it's changed over time and it changes with me varying on the level of urgency with what kind of artist it is, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, if it's a band I really love, I like to just be like alone in my room with my headphones on Spotify. If it's a band I'm kind of more casual about, you know, when I get in my car, my phone Bluetooth syncs automatically with my sound system. So I just, if I'm driving to work or I'm driving home from work, I can just be like, all right, I'll get through this Nothing Nowhere album, you know, on the drive to work. I can do that. But if, you know, like when Brand New dropped Science Fiction, before all the problems happened, like, right. Don't at me, please. I was really excited then and I was at work and, I didn't want to listen to it at work because I wanted to fully focus on it, but I just, there was no option. You know what I mean? When it's that urgent of a band, I was at work, basically not working, you know, at my old job and just streaming the album. How about you, T-Sharp?
Yeah, this is a really interesting question because I never actually thought about how I approach listening to music. But usually when there's a, you know, quote unquote important release that drops, depending on what it is, I usually just drop everything and listen to it and just kind of zone out. You know, like when the State Tramps song dropped, albeit it was at midnight on Friday. So I usually take that time to just go through, like sit down and listen to as much as I can of everything that just dropped. Apple Music has a great page that under their new releases tabs that just lines up all the new singles and all the new albums, and I can slide through and kind of preview and listen to what I want. If it comes out during the day, usually I just drop everything and just kind of zone out and listen to it, and I'm either really happy at the end of it or I'm really pissed off.
Yeah, and I didn't even think about this point, but I'm always on Spotify now. I'm pure streaming. Mm. Like, a lot of people will go buy the vinyl, you know, and they'll spin the vinyl. You still buy CDs, right?
I do.
I mean, you'll
all
still go to Target.
Yep.
And your first experience is popping that disc in, which the only thing I've done that with in the last 5 years was the Taylor Swift record.
It is really interesting how much streaming has changed it, because I used to, you know, before, because I grew up in the middle of nowhere in the cornfields of Indiana, so I had dial-up internet growing up, and when I wanted to listen to a full record, like maybe I could hear a single from like the music video while I'm at school or something, but if I want to listen to a full record, I had to go out, buy the CD, bring it home, just chill out in my room and listen to the whole thing, and that was my first impression for so many records. But nowadays, you know, I listen to the record, and if I like it, I'll go buy it so I can like read the liner notes and stuff like that. But yeah, good question. Definitely.
Definitely. We thank Kimberly and Alex for writing in. If you have any questions, feel free to send them to notescene@gmail.com and we will happily answer them on the show. But we got to move on, Tyler Sharp, because we got some new music this week.
We did get some new music, man. It's the pop punk show.
Absolutely. So State Champs announced their new third album, Living Proof, out this June on Pure Noise Records. And they released a new single, Dead and Gone. So there's a lot to unpack here with this band, Tyler Sharp. And I figure we should just kind of start with the single, Dead and Gone. What are your thoughts on the song? What's your takeaway? Where are you at with it? Talk me through this, my man.
All right, here we go. We're doing the State Champs dive.
Right.
So State Champs have come back. They announced a new album. They got their new single. It's called Dead and Gone. And they've taken a lot of influence from their friends in 5 Seconds of Summer. This is a very big
old
sounding,
Five Sauce.
Old Five Sauce. Yeah, definitely. Backwards. Who knows if they're still
friends.
Dude,
the old Five Sauce can't come to the phone right now. Sorry.
Right, absolutely. So this song takes a lot of influence from like the Amnesia days, the She Looks So Perfect days of Five Sauce. Very big sounding chorus, you know, anthemic, big guitars, big drums, big melodies. It was a bit of a turnoff for me, I'm not going to lie. I didn't think that was the right move for the band. I totally get it, you know?
Tyler, there are a lot of 15-year-old pop punk girls getting their daggers out right now, ready for you. Just warning you. They're out there.
I know, they're out there. I don't think this is the right move for the band. I think this is a very dead-end formula. There's a reason why Five Sauce is abandoning it. And I know, you know, it makes sense for State Champs to do this, not really just because they've been friends with Five Sauce, but because they've really rode the line between neon pop punk and new wave pop punk, you know, between like early all-time low and current neck deep. They've really like rode that line in between those two worlds. And I will say, you know, I hear a lot of Nothing Personal on this song, era all-time low. There's a lot of kind of almost weightless moments on this song, especially during the last chorus when they kick it up into double time. And I wish that they were playing Four on the Floor on that drum kit every chorus throughout this song. I really think it would drive more and it'd give it more like an elevated feel, which I think is the best State Champ song still. So ultimately, I'm pretty disappointed with this song. I will admit that the melody's semi-catchy. Lyrics are, you know, thematically, it's just kind of take it or leave it. It's kind of like your typical.
Not a whole lot there.
There's not much depth here.
They're not gonna, you know, they're not gonna make you think about who you are as a person.
Exactly. So, yeah. There's no existentialism.
Business is huge.
Yeah, yeah. Just kind of your typical straightforward pop punk song with a early Five Sauce twist. And I'm at a 6.5 out of 10 on this song. Pretty disappointed. It's okay. That's where I'm at. What about you, Matt?
So this song was co-written by Mark Hoppus. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, I was surprised. I guess, too, Alex Gaskarth collaborated on a lot of this album.
Was it on this song?
No, not this song. This was all Hoppus. But the rest of the album is got Gaskarth all over it, apparently. You know, it's... I'm kind of like, I'm right with you, Tyler Sharp.
Okay.
It's decent. It's your typical pop punk summery jam. But like, I feel like they're capable of more, you know, like you said, that chorus it's catchy enough, but like, I don't know, man. Like, I got to admit, like, I didn't hit that check mark on Spotify, you know, like I didn't add it to my library.
No,
like it's not that special. It's kind of underwhelming for a lead single. It still feels very super juvenile. I come out right with you. I'm at a 6.5 out of 10. It's which it's rare that we are at the same exact score. So
that's pretty crazy. Yeah.
I mean, take that for what it is, listeners. But yeah, it's just it's fun and airy and summery, all the things you'd expect from pop punk. But it's just like not there. I spent a lot of time thinking about State Champs today. Too much time, too much time thinking about State Champs today. I came to one question I have for you, Tyler Sharp, about State Champs.
All right.
One question. Are we sure they're good? Are they good at music?
You've asked this question every time they've had a cycle since the finer things. I mean...
That's where I come to. Like, are they good at music? Because, like... You know, Secrets is like their biggest song, and it's not a good song. It's not that good of a song.
That's funny. I think Elevated is their best song.
I said biggest.
Okay.
Secrets. Okay. Blows. Sorry. Elevated. Elevated's a better song, I agree, but Secrets, as far as numbers go, definitely blows it out of the water. So it's like their biggest song is not that good. You
is
know?
State
like,
Champs good at music?
Are they?
Like, I think they are passable at music, and that's the only reason they've made it to where they're at right now. They've gotten a lot of help from their friends who are much more better off commercially than they are, and they've kind of ridden on the coattails of a lot of other acts. And I think that definitely has to be taken into consideration when we talk about State Champs' current commercial state.
I mean, they are all excited to be BFF with All Time Low guys. You know
what
I mean?
I mean, they get shout outs on Twitter from Halsey, and she wears their merch and stuff like that. So they have like these top tier friends. But I think
Halsey's like more about State Champs than she is about All Time Low.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, I know. State Champs are definitely one of the more newer wave bands that those top tier celebrities have kind of been getting into, like one of the very few, because she'll shout out a lot of neon bands all the time. Mayday Parade, The Main, I think, right, Pierce, I think what's going on with state champs is that they, it's easy to perceive this band as much bigger than they actually are. And a lot of the hype, I feel like, is false. There's just never been anything overtly special about their music. And we saw it when you premiered, so you locked down the premiere of their last album, Around the World and Back, mm-hmm. on Alternative Press in the summer of 2015. We had the full stream of the album, and you also locked down the single premiere for Threat Level Midnight from Neck Deep's Life's Not Out to Get You. Mm-hmm. And that one single dominated traffic over the entire State Champs album premiere.
Well, I mean, Threat Level Midnight was a fucking banger. You know what I mean? I think in that review I called it the perfect pop punk song. I couldn't even believe what I was hearing at the time.
And that's the difference between those two bands, kind of.
State Champs just never hit that moment where you're like, this is perfect.
There's just a lot of State Champs' music. A majority of it is very unremarkable.
So I want to pull back for a sec and we can come back to the unremarkableness discussion. Mm-hmm. State Champs came up during that pop punk resurgence, which was mm-hmm. adjacent to, at the time, you know, we had that emo revival that was happening, right, with all those bands. And mm-hmm. Everyone, oh my God, I'm so glad we don't have to talk about the emo revival anymore and like take it seriously.
Right?
But
yep.
alongside that, there was this pop punk, at the time we were calling the pop punk resurgence, bands like Real Friends, Neck Deep, Knuckle Puck. And early on, State Champs were the smallest, like, of all these bands, but they got big quick. And they were sort of different because, like, Elevated was more of, like, an early Sum 41 kind of song,
yep.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that chorus even jacks, like, straight from Sum 41's No Reasons.
Absolutely.
It totally, yeah. the line, tell me why, can't you see, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I wasn't about it. Like, I wasn't about them
really?
At first. From the very beginning, because, like, they were, like, less emo, you know what I mean? And they were more All-Time Low, like, meets Bad Newfound Glory, meets early Sum 41 to me. And I liked, like, that Real Friends were very emo on those early EPs. And I liked the early Knuckle. I liked the emo-ness. And they were lacking the emo, so I wasn't about it. But, you know, compared to all those other bands we've just mentioned, like, they've avoided a certain stagnation, like, due, I think, in part to their rabid fan base. You know, Around the World sold 13,000 copies first week. You know, that's beating Real Friends and Knuckle Puck, you know, who float around or under 10,000 copies.
Mm.
It was a strong seller over the next 2 years. I think it's moved around 50 to 60,000 copies.
Okay.
The band have 600,000 Spotify listeners. That's on par with the Wonder Years. That's more than Real Friends, who have 387,000 listeners, more than Knuckle Puck, who have 330,000 listeners. And for perspective, that's less than Neck Deep, who have 1 million listeners on Spotify.
Like I said, I feel like the longevity of State Champs is really, like, we have to take into consideration the shouts and cosigns that band has been given. Because I can't think of another explanation for it. You know, like, they've gotten hype, but they really fell behind. They lived in this really weird world in between, you know, they're above the Real Friends, mm-hmm. Knuckle Pucks, that wave of bands, but they're still behind Story So Far and Neck Deep. You
sure.
know, like, they're right in the middle, it seems like.
And that's what's interesting about them to me, is that those other bands like Knuckle Puck and Real Friends and all the smaller ones like Forever Came Calling or Handguns or whatever, like, they've all rusted. Whereas State Champs, you can't say that about them. Like, they're still in the game, you know what I mean?
I think,
of all the new wave, of all those new wave pop punk bands, like, they're still in the game. And it's even more mysterious because, like you said, the music is so unremarkable.
And I think sonically, they don't necessarily fit with either of those two groups, Real Friends and Knuckle Puck, or Story So Far and Neck Deep. Like you said, there's a lot of State Champs that kind of sounds like Sum 41. And I think they take a lot from Neon, which is why they get a lot of that crossover from the All-Time Low Mayday Parade
less
main
emo,
fans.
More commercialized neon
right
sound.
There's a sheen over State
exactly.
Champs sound that puts them in that 2007 to 2009 range that gives those fans a little bit something more to hang on to. So
but like, they don't take it all the way like a Waterparks does. They don't go right back there. It's still, there's like this, still this tiny element of legit pop punk too.
Absolutely. But they're one synthesizer away from being legit neon. Like, that's all it takes for this band to be the neon revival, man. 2K18. That's where we're at. So, but obviously they took the early Five Sauce route, and I just don't see with Five Sauce abandoning that formula, I don't see another band to a much lesser fan base taking up that formula and going anywhere with it. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't think the song's strong enough, and I'm still somewhat excited for the album, but like longevity for state champs, it's just not looking bright, man.
Yeah, it's just weird because you can't ignore the numbers. Like, they got the numbers. They got the rabid fan base. I don't understand the music. Like, I actually liked that deluxe single, Slow Burn, they put out.
I know you hated it,
but I liked it. And that got me, you know, a little excited. This single has, you know, sort of stomped out any flames of excitement I had from that. And I actually didn't mind their Punk Goes Pop cover of Shawn Mendes' Stitches. I thought it was okay. But overall, like, their albums to me are just, you know, they have their moments, but they're just the definition of meh.
Yeah, I feel like middle of the road.
Like, thinking back last year, like, we liked like the Seaway album and we liked the Rome album. Like, if you listen to our episodes last year, like, those are the pop punk albums we gave the most praise to, I think. We weren't like saying they were the next coming, but we were like, these are solid. And like, are those the bands we should be focusing on, not state champs? You know, like, are those the bands that can save pop? It's tough because they're so small, but like,
you can't look at Seaway and say
that Seaway record is better than like the last state champs album.
So is, you know, the Rome album. But you just can't look at those bands and say these guys are going to take pop punk to the next level.
Yeah,
they just don't have the right momentum. They don't have the right backing. You know, Seaway's been around for too long. It's just not going to happen with those bands, and that's unfortunate. But like, we're left with,
it's like, if one of those two bands had a little more backing and they had state champs fan base, like, they maybe would be able to do more with it than state champs are with their sort of mediocre music.
Totally. I feel like both of those bands stumbled out of the gates too much. If they would have dropped these two albums towards the beginning of their career, like as their first full lengths on a Hopeless Records or something like that, they'd have more of a shot. Like, they'd have more momentum. But we've just seen, like, once you've been a band for a while and you're on the downslope, it doesn't matter what you release at this point. Like, as sad as that is, the scene is just in such an unhealthy state that there's just no backdrop for bands to fall into. So that's unfortunately where those bands are at. And state champs, like we've been saying, are still in limbo. And the longevity and the future of their career really rides on this album. And it just kind of feels like this is not what they needed to do. The song is at 177,000 streams on Spotify. Mm-hmm. And the music video, we're recording on Sunday, came out Friday at midnight, I think. It only has 71,000 views. Like, the music video hasn't even cracked 100,000.
I didn't even see that. Oh, no.
It is not well right now.
So, Neck Deep's Peace in the Panic was a big letdown, obviously. And it's like, we're kind of running out of pop punk band. Like, who saves pop punk, you know? And state champs were one of those potential bands to do it. And then this single kind of dampens my hopes of that. It's like, what about the story so far? Like, that question kind of comes up, you know, like, where are you guys?
They're the last, like, band standing.
Is that, they're the last ones who, like, and only because they haven't shown their cards yet. You know what I mean? Like,
right. But
I don't know what they got.
I think we can agree that they're the most I feel like they've been the most consistent band at putting out bangers out of all the new wave pop punk song bands.
And that them and Neck Deep could kind of butt heads, but I really feel like the story so far are the kings of pop punk right now at the moment.
Like, I just kind of feel like they're, like, by default,
the band.
Though, you know, like, by default, like,
they're the leaders. As the Wonder Years, you know, have exited the genre, the story so far are the leaders, and Neck Deep have made a big shot at it, but I think they're going to lose fans from that last record.
Yeah, we obviously have different opinions than a lot of people do on that Neck Deep album, but I truly believe that there is not enough longevity in that
record. I mean, nobody's talking about it.
Right, that's the problem. And like,
it's over.
On the cycle so far, so they did 29,000 or 30,000 first week, it was right there. And obviously, because they milked Warped Tour that summer for all it was worth, they had pre-orders at the merch table, they had two songs out, fans pre-ordered this album off the good graces that they had from Life's Not Out to Get You. That's why it was such a big success first week. It has only sold 48,000 copies on the cycle, so it's only sold 18,000 since it came out about, what, 8 months ago at this point ish
yeah,
somewhere okay. around there.
So it's, yeah, I mean, it's moving-ish. I mean, I think the last store so far recorded like 60,000 or more.
Do you know what Life's Not Out to Get You did on the cycle?
I have no idea.
That's a good
man.
Question. We'll have to get back to that one. Yeah.
Any other thoughts on state champs before we move on, Todd?
I mean, it's time to be worried.
Yeah.
That's where it's time to be concerned about the future for state champs.
All right. Pop Punk, we are putting you on alert. One of your standard bearers is it's questionable for the future. But we gotta move on, Tyler. And we gotta talk about Blink 182, who are apparently working on new music. Mark Hoppus says he said a new Blink 182 music, and he said day one. And he's got a picture of Travis Barker, and it looks like they're tracking drums. What's your gut shot reaction to this, Tyler?
I don't want to be that guy, but
you don't
want
to be that guy. What guy are you about to be?
I'm gonna be that guy.
Oh no!
Has Skiba been in any pictures?
Okay, so I thought I went there. I thought the same as you. And Skiba is still in the band as of 23 hours ago.
As of 23
Instagram.
Hours ago.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
He is right. Still in the band. He is. Their Vegas residency is coming up, and mm-hmm. I think he's gonna be there. I did that. I was like, where? I went that. I was like, where's Skiba? That was my first thought. I like scoured all the Instagrams, and yes, Skiba is still with them, sort of in the Blink compound,
good.
Rehearsing all that. So.
I appreciate you doing that dive for me.
Yeah. So there's no Tom reunion, obviously, because he's doing Angels and Airwaves and doing his
The
Stars.
Dude, he posted
Academy.
On Instagram, like literally within the same day, I think it was, that those first pictures from Mark and Travis being in the studio, mm-hmm. he posted on Instagram, he's like, I'm coming back, # Angels and Airwaves on Instagram.
Yeah.
It's just like, my God.
Okay, well, you're going to drop a mixtape or something? Like, get the fuck out of here.
Are you kidding me? Tom, shut up.
Side note. Tom made me mad the other day. He posted on Instagram like a picture of a space shuttle, a real space shuttle, getting ready for launch. Mm-hmm. And he on his Instagram, and he tagged To the Stars Academy in it. And he's like, big things happen. And I'm like, fuck, he does this all the time. Like not that long ago, he posted a picture of like a NASA, multi-billion-dollar telescope on top of a mountain, that looks at other galaxies and shit. And he tags, To the Stars Academy, like, we're working on big things here. And like, he makes it look like it's like this actual like school with like telescopes and research facilities and, for investors to invest in. And in reality, it's just like a fucking website where you can like give him money for things. You know what I mean? It just infuriates me. It's almost the point of like he's scamming his fans.
It's almost like a pyramid scheme at this point.
Tom is one of those musicians I've been so close to being, and I can't say I'm going to be done with Tom because I know the second the reunion happens, I'm going to be all about it. But
yeah.
Man,
we'll never be done with Tom. We'll never be done with Tom.
He really can put you in that way.
Absolutely. But, I'm completely done with him until he releases music. I couldn't give two shits less about, what alien he supposedly finds off the coast of whatever country.
Right.
He's probably ripping those fucking telescope pictures off Google, man. Like,
no, look, I mean, straight up, these are just NASA facilities that have nothing to do with his website, To the Stars, and he flexes like he's got this big fucking, international, establishment. It's just such bullshit. It makes
me mad. My God.
And it pisses me off that I'll still be all about it when Tom comes back. Like, I should be done with him, and I'm not.
Never.
God, how many Tom rants have we done on this show, man?
Too
how many?
Many?
I can't.
It's been a minute, though. It has been a minute.
All right, back to Blink. So, it's almost been 2 years since California, which could seem 2 years could seem kind of quick for new Blink music to come, but like that album was such a big success,
No one saw that coming. What did
number
it do
one
first week?
Number one album in the country. It did 180,000 copies first week. Yep. It went gold. Bored to Death was, a summer smash hit single. Number one on alt radio most of the summer. Nobody saw that coming. That was fucking awesome to see. She's Out of Her Mind was a strong follow-up single. It got to number two at alt and was in rotation sort of all for the rest of the summer. And it gives kind of like a justification for new Blink music this soon. Like, they had so much success.
Dude, I mean, it's past justification, that album. I love how everyone just kind of forgot that the deluxe edition happened.
Listen, I mean, that's kind of part of this here, is pretending that that didn't happen.
Oh my God, man. Do you remember that?
If you want to go back to some of our old episodes where Tyler and I struggled through the slow rollout of the deluxe edition, there are some blink, you want some blink rants, there are some blink rants back
it,
in that
dude, can you believe it was about a year ago that we were doing that?
We were just yelling every episode, man. We were mad.
There was one song I remember, there was one song I tried to defend because it sounded like Emery. Those songs were all over the fucking place. Just ridiculous. But I love how it was here and then completely gone. You know, people just stopped talking about it. Let's just act like that didn't happen. And it does feel like we've had a break from Blink.
It does, that's how we like protect Blink. Like, oh, this was bad. Pretend didn't happen. You know what I mean?
We don't talk about that.
Not a lot of people talk about Neighborhoods for the same reason. Right, you know what I mean?
Same reason.
It's kind of like we went straight from self or Untitled to California. You know?
Right. Yep.
The lexicon there, but so I want a California follow-up. Like, I enjoy this era of the band, you know, if we forget about the deluxe edition. Like, you know, they found their new identity with Skiba, and it's obvious there were some struggles along the way, but now I feel like now that they've found their identity as, you know, Blink 183 or whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. they can kind of hone in on it and make more songs like San Diego, like No Future, like Bored to Death, like She's Out of Her Mind, like Home with Such a Lonely Place. They can make more of the better songs.
Right.
Because I could see them consolidating them onto a really good album. Because I really did like California, and they have the potential here to make an even better record.
Does the deluxe edition concern you at all?
I mean, yeah, like as far as sales and hype wise, you know.
Well, I mean, just actual like structure of songs and influence and the directions that they go in.
No, because I really felt like that was just a bunch of garbage that got dumped on us.
Okay, all right.
I don't know. Are you of the same mind, or do you think that those are real like signals for where the band is headed?
Well, do we know that those songs were written before or after California? That
they
would be
like they were written after, but I don't know that I believe that.
That would be my big question. I'm sure it was a little bit of both. They were just kind of messing around both times.
Either way, even if they were new songs, they didn't get the full new album.
Oh,
you know,
right. Yeah, they didn't get any push or anything.
Just thrown out, slapped on a plate and handed to you. Like, so
exactly.
It doesn't concern me that much, but from a hype sales perspective it might, but I just feel like everybody ignored it. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
There could be a lot of people who didn't even know it happened. So
for sure. Especially I mean, when you think about the reach and the scope of California and the reach and scope of the deluxe edition, it's just two completely different worlds. So I definitely hope you're right. I hope they take what they learned from California, what worked, what didn't, and apply that to the next record and kind of cut off the filler.
I'm all about it because I love that album.
Which you hated when it came out.
Right. But I love it. And, you know, it's like they put out California and everyone was all about it. And then everyone like kind of moved on and didn't see the deluxe edition because everybody got what they needed. And they're like, all right, we're going to take this and go. And then Blink just kind of fell on their face with that deluxe stuff, and hopefully not too many people saw. Did you see Mark's What's My Age Again tweet?
I did not. What did he tweet?
So he tweeted that the What's My Age Again lyric is, I work alone to get the feeling right. Straight up. My first concert, I was in fifth grade, Blink 182. My life has been a lie since then because I've been singing I Walk Alone, you know, to get the feeling right.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I've been singing that. Like, that you go on your date or whatever, and he walks alone to get the feeling right. And
that's the point.
The actual lyric is, I wore cologne to get the feeling right. Yeah, straight up, dude. My life has been, that's my first fucking concert, and I screamed that lyric in fifth grade, and my life has been a lie, you know, for, I don't know, 20 years, you know.
See,
what I mean,
what is going up with these classic lyrics, man? Has
right?
everything just been a lie? Did any of that even happen?
Right. I wore cologne to get the feeling right.
First the panic, I write sins lyric. There's mean, dude, just,
but that's you. Like, I really, I walk alone, like, not just me, the whole stadium was screaming, I walk alone.
Dude, they had to have heard this. Think about how many stadium shows, how many massive crowds they've played to with people screaming those words back in his face. And just in his mind, he's probably smiling the whole time.
And
like, 15 he's just
years
laughing.
Later, you air it out? Okay. You know, and then I check the lyric site, and of course, instant confirmation.
Oh, like, my God.
Dude, how do you do this with your favorite bands? But, all right, crazy. We're going to move on to our pop story this week, which is Ariana Grande is back. She released the lead single, No Tears Left to Cry, from her upcoming fourth album. A little bit to unpack here. Return of one of our big pop stars, but we should start with the song, Tyler. What are your thoughts on No Tears Left to Cry?
So No Tears is such an interesting song. And I know my homie Max Martin worked on this song. And Max, absolutely. I am concerned about the math on this song.
there's definitely some algebra on this song.
I think there's, you know, some formula errors potentially on this song. So it starts off with this very anthemic, huge vocal melody, and there's a lot of strings behind it, and it feels like it's supposed to fill out a stadium. And I was like, all right, we're gonna do this, you know, we're gonna go this kind of more ballady route. And then this beat kicks in, and mm-hmm. we go total just groove on it, and she's mm-hmm. got a flow, you know, her melody completely changes up, and it's very abrasive on first listen. But once you get into that groove, you're like, okay, I'm about this.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you're like fully into it, she cuts back into that huge expansive melody for the chorus.
Yep.
And you're just kind of going back and forth the whole song, and it really feels like a tug of war. And
right.
I struggled with that. Like the
we've
first
seen this more and more too. With,
absolutely.
With big pop singles.
Mm-hmm. And I that, struggled
that
with this.
Bipolarness.
Yeah, a lot. My first like five times listening through it. But by the time, you know, because I was waiting for this drop. Midnight on Friday, this was like, this was what I was waiting for. And I listened to it over and over. And I went to bed, I woke up the next morning, and I literally, without even having to listen to it again, that chorus was stuck in my head. Like, I was singing it all day long. So I'm concerned about the math and the ultimate kind of longevity for this song. But the more and more that I've listened to it, I've listened to it probably about 20 times at this point.
Dude, same.
And I just, based on the response that I'm seeing, I think it's going to work. Like, I'm more like a, when I first heard the song, I was completely on the fence, 50-50. This is either going to just pop right off or it's going to fall really mm-hmm. flat. The more I listen to it and the more I see the response that it's getting from stream numbers and where it's already charted on top 40, I think it's going to be a hit, man. I think we're going for top 10 on top 40, and she's just raking in the Spotify streams right now. So I am going to just preface my score with a caveat that it could change in the future, but right now I am like right under an 8. I'm at a 7.9 out of 10.
7.9.
And when I first
almost
heard it,
banger status.
When I first listen, I was at about a 6.5. So it's just been climbing my ranks ever since I've had it on repeat since it dropped. So almost at an 8. But I'm very
almost
interested to hear what you have to say about this song, Matt. So hit me with it. What you got?
So my thoughts. This song, this is a very interesting move.
Mm-hmm.
Because like this song is kind of a throwback in a way. Mm-hmm. So after hearing the title, you know, I thought it would be like a sad sort of ballad relating to the Manchester concert bombing where like over 20 people tragically died, you know, that she was performing at, but it's really not. It's kind of about moving on and being happy. So that took me by surprise. But this song, like, especially the verses, this feels so much like that like early 2000s like electro pop, like that Euphoria core that had a brief moment on the charts. Like, can you feel the rain on your skin, Tyler? You know, it's like a total like Natasha Bedingfield, Kylie Minogue kind of callback moment here.
Absolutely.
Very sunny, like pocket full of sunshine verses, and then again you have that gloomy chorus that just kind of shows like the beauty of her vocal range. It's a really good opportunity just to show what a vocal talent she is. I also, a little thing I noticed is this kind of feels like the first post-Reputation single we've heard with the Taylor Swift influence, because you've got Ari kind of doing that sing rap thing where she's like, we turn it up, you know, and it kind of sounds a little Reputation-y. So I wonder if Ari had that Taylor album on and during a heavy rotation. I'm right there with you, man. I think this is a good song. I like it. It's fresh. It's different. I'm at a 7.8 out of 10.
Whoa, man.
With potential to go up. So, you know, we're close. We're right there, you know?
Yeah, we are on it today. We are totally on the same page for this episode. State champs, yeah. And Ari.
It's just good. It's different. You know what I mean? You know, she could have made a Spotify core, you know, sort of EDM banger, and she didn't. She did something a little different.
Totally. Absolutely. The reason I bring up concern for a couple different reasons. You were talking about the throwback. When I think about throwbacks in the current top 40 pop radio environment, I think back to the Camila launch with Crying in the Club. That really reached
all the Christina Aguilera stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. And that really flopped for her. really stumbled out of the gate. And obviously, you know, she picked herself back up and now she's at the front of the entire
biggest
pack.
Pop star in the world.
Right. Exactly. So even if Ari...
It's dangerous.
Absolutely. Even if Ari stumbles here, there's obviously still time and room for her to recapture the magic. But I do think there's something a little bit more special here than in Crying in the Club. But were you concerned on first listen? Were you concerned at all?
I was confused. Okay. It definitely took me four listens to sort of get it, you know? Mm-hmm. I was instantly intrigued, though, but I was confused. And we should point out, Ari has stumbled in the past and recovered from it. So,
right.
If this song, but this song just kind of moves in a way that, you know, other throwbacks don't. So there, you know, there could be success. No thoughts about the song yet from Victoria Justice, I noticed. I checked her Twitter and you can't
help yourself, can you? Listeners, yeah. Matt listen. Has an infatuation with Victorious listen. And Ariana.
Listen, I think we all have new singles, Tyler Sharp. I think we all do.
I think we all sing great. I think we all podcast great, Matt.
So my everything in 2014 was like huge for Ari. Mm-hmm. It did 169,000 copies first week. Big singles, Problem, Break Free, Love Me Harder, Bang Bang. These are songs that made her like a true pop star from just the really talented R&B singer she had been previously. And huge for her. And the follow-up, Dangerous Woman, stalled really fucking hard out the gate, actually. Like, Focus was originally launched as the lead single, and then it was like scrapped as the lead single and replaced a year later with Dangerous Woman, the title track, which didn't even really perform that much better than Focus. Interesting about Focus is like it did terrible as a radio single, but it got an insane amount of views on YouTube mm-hmm. for reasons. The next album, Dangerous Woman, only sold 175,000 copies first week, which was an increase, but it just felt light to me, you know?
Felt like she needed to take a larger step forward than that.
Yeah, what it was Focus flopping as a single and Dangerous Woman not really being that big blowout lead that it should have been. But ultimately, like, Into You and Side to Side blew up, became a massive hit, and really saved the album cycle. And that kind of kept her in that lane of pop star above like Selena Gomez and Hailee Steinfeld and Demi Lovato, but still like below your Taylor Swift's and your Camila Cabello's.
Absolutely. Yeah. It felt like the second half of the Dangerous Woman cycle came on strong because like I wasn't paying a lot of attention to like detail, like strong detail to the current pop market then. But I remember when Into You started taking off and definitely when Side to Side took off as a single, like it was pretty unavoidable.
Right.
That album and just the general discussion around Ariana.
Really saved that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it really kind of set her up well for the next cycle.
Cemented her as one of the blue chip pop stars of our era.
So she's got about 22 million monthly listeners on Spotify. The song, No Tears Left to Cry, we're recording on Sunday again. Song dropped on Friday at midnight, has 12 million streams on Spotify, which is already more than the Nicki singles. I think we need to point that out.
God damn it. Why you gotta do that, man?
That's important because those Nicki singles just are not going to be sticking. Yeah, Barbie Tings has 12 million, Chun-Li has 11, and they've been out for over a week now. And Ari has done that in a couple days.
And I think
the music video ended up on trending. I don't know how far it got. When I saw it, it was at number 8. But I'd just like to shout out, I was in the 200,000 club. I just want to throw that out there. Because now it has over, I don't know exactly where it's at. Last time I checked, it had 24 million.
Oh my God. Yeah, the music video just blew up.
When
I checked on trending, it was the number one.
It was at number one? Okay. Yeah, I was interested to see if she could get there.
What a spectacle of a video. I mean, just...
Oh my gosh. She just inceptioned the whole thing, man.
Yeah, it's just like the most robotic, crazy pop star we've ever seen her go in a video.
Yeah, it's at 29 million right now.
Any other thoughts on Ariana Grande, Tyler Sharp?
I am very excited about this cycle now. The hype is obviously there, too. Like, I think this song is already, in 2 days, it's at number 32 on Top 40 radio. Yeah, man. So
that chorus
big
just
jump.
I think it's just really big. Weird little vortex. You know, it's like the song's all fucking sunny with the verse, and then you just go into this like hyperspace vortex in that chorus, and she's just so slick about it.
I just think the ballad aspect of it, because that chorus melody is very ballady. It almost lines up with obviously two completely different songs and situations and everything, but it reminds me of how Kesha had success with Praying.
Right,
which was a straight-up piano ballad, but that melody was so massive, and it was such an antithesis to the current Top 40 Spotify core market that I think there's a way for this song to really break out, and she might have a top 10 on her hands.
Yeah, hopefully, too, she can get her first number one single.
She's
only got as high as number two, which is crazy, which that was a problem with problems with Iggy Azalea. Okay, we got to move on, Tyler. Our next story is The Word Alive. They released their new single, Why Am I Like This? The second from the band's new album, Violent Noise, out in May on longtime label Felix Records. I thought the lead single, Red Clouds, the first one, was fucking terrible. I just got to point that out. Mm-hmm. It was a 4 out of 10 for me. Why Am I Like This is not as bad to me, but it's insanely boring and flat, and I'm at a 4.5 out of 10 on this one. Telly's voice sounds terrible and scorched, and the band, it's over. I mean, this to me just sounds
it's been over.
The band, but it really, I mean, this is like the nail in the coffin for me. I mean, you're right, it has been over the last two records, but this is just, they officially sound like garbage. Where are you at in this song, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Telly is going in a minor aspect to his vocal melodies because they're going for a rock radio standpoint.
He can't sing
in his Anthony Green tone.
Do you think he still can, though? It almost sounds like there's some damage in there, like on his vocal cords.
He hits it in the bridge.
Yeah.
He goes high in the bridge because, you know, you got to give something for the fans to hang on to. I have a question for you. What is this song about?
Fucking that the Word Alive suck and they want to know why they suck. I don't know.
It just like lyrically, it seems like it's kind of like about a sexual relationship.
Listen, man, shouts to you for actually reading the lyrics to this
song. Well, I'm kind of pissed
off.
Shouts
to Tyler Sharp, everyone.
This song really pissed me off thematically. Like, obviously, sonically, this is not what The Word Alive is and ever should have been. He says, our own bloody Sunday in the chorus of it. And it completely rips the melody. I'm guessing it's supposed to be a nod, but it completely rips the melody to U2's Sunday, Bloody Sunday. And Bloody Sunday is about the incident in Derry where British troops shot and killed unarmed civil rights protesters and bystanders. And he's kind of like comparing that to his own personal like trials and tribulations. Like,
Tally.
Dude, get off your fucking pedestal, man.
Tally.
Oh man, this song really fucking pissed me off, and it's time for the word alive to be over.
Yeah, I mean, and Telly defending a certain other band member for using a certain word that really pissed me off earlier this year. We're not even going to get into that, but you know that he's. Come on, Telly.
It's over. It is
Okay. So the last two records were unlistenable, right? Straight up. I mean, they don't matter. Life Cycles in 2012 was okay, I thought. Do you agree with me there?
Yeah, it was was definitely passable. It was okay, especially passable. Given the current state of metalcore and
Yeah. Deceiver was really good, I thought. And Empire, the Empire EP from 2009, is still this band's magnum opus. Like, which is
that's
sad
the best they ever got. Yep.
So many of the members who made it are gone. And it's basically been all downhill since that EP and Deceiver. You know, on God, you just have so many jams on Empire. Like, I hope people don't forget because they're really good. This band didn't used to suck. Quit While You're Ahead, Battle Royale. The only rule is that there are no rules. Like, those were fucking slayers when they came out, dude.
And I mean, take it back to the Craig Mabbitt demos.
Bro, like, for anyone who doesn't remember, like, this was Craig,
this is Craig Mabbitt's band.
He started when he got kicked out of Bless the Fall before he joined Escape the Fate. He started this band, and you know, Telly snaked his way into the band and got Craig removed, and that's the whole thing. But
like, yeah, Telly,
dude, the devil inside Casanova Rodeo, Are You on Drugs, go listen to all the old Craig Mabbitt World Live songs. Those are still classics to me.
Absolutely. Yeah, this band mattered at one point. You know, I think a lot of people forget that this band truly did matter and there was genuine hype here. And Telly was almost a scene celebrity, but that dude has rubbed me wrong since the Greeley Estates drama. Like, I've always had issues with that guy.
I mean, so, he used to rep, like, his Republican values more, too, which kind of annoyed. I mean, whatever your political, I don't want to get political on this show, but, like, their Facebook page used to say political views, no Obama, like, on the Word Alive. I'm just like, get the fuck out of here with that shit on the Word Alive Facebook page. Yeah, on the Word Alive page, I was like, get the fuck out of here. Like, and I don't want to get political on the show, but I'm just saying, I don't think that band should have, like, I don't know, just wrong time. But, yeah, the Word Alive, like you said, they used to be right there with, like, Amorosa, Skylet Drive, and, you know, Sky 8's Airplane, and all those bands, and Confide. Like, they were right there with all those bands coming up hot.
And, I mean, with Life Cycles, they were trying to get on, you know, the Of Mice and Men, Ask Alexandria level. That's where the trajectory of that band was supposed to be going. And they just blew it, man.
They took a left turn with whatever the next one was.
Was it Dark Matter?
No. Dark Matter.
That was the album after the next one?
Yeah. Whatever that album was, the lead single was like Play the Victim, I think. And it was just like, we want to be like the Tool of metalcore. It's like, what? You know, like, no. Any other thoughts on the Word Alive, Tyler Sharp?
No. It's time
for... Did you get your score on the song?
No, I don't think
I did.
Down
the guillotine, man.
But I'm at a 4.5.
Okay. All right. We're at the same score again. What's going on?
Really? You gave it a 4.5? I don't even remember what you gave.
Yeah. Shit. All right. 5 Seconds of Summer released the title track from their upcoming third album, Youngblood. What are your thoughts quickly on this song, Tyler Sharp?
I love this song. It takes me right back to Fall Out Boy Save Rock and Roll. It's got this really heavy stomp beat. And quick question. I didn't do the dive to figure out who's actually singing on this one. Who's on the chorus?
I think you got Luke with a lot of back, with a lot of gang vocals.
Okay, yeah. Definitely tons of layers in that chorus.
Yeah, layered every which way.
He's belting out that melody so hard. I'm like, dang, got some Johnny Craig vibes up in this, man. Like, that, being able to sing along to this song is super fun. It's a great summer song. And I'm just, like, really excited for this 5 Seconds of Summer album, man. Like, all of a sudden, I've listened to this song so many times. I love how short it is because that just expands upon replay value. And I've just been going back and back and back. And it's, like, cemented into my heavy rotation on my Apple Music profile right now. So I love the Save Rock and Roll vibes. Great song. Like, it's got that Imagine Dragons type stomp beat, but there's actual muscle behind it that really propels it and kind of separates it from falling into that little Imagine Dragons trope. So I'm a big fan. I'm at an 8 out of 10. What about you?
Wow. More than the Ari single.
Yeah, I know.
Sit down,
I know.
Dude. Get out of here.
Get out of here.
All right. I think this is a good pop song. Like, it sounds primed to be another hit. It's catchy as hell. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, Want You Back already is a good hit. You know, I'm a little less than you. I'm at a 7 out of 10 right
okay.
now.
All right.
But you know, just like with Want You Back, like I started around there and I grew on that song. It got closer to an 8 for me. So there's potential to grow here, but I think it's a fun jam. You know, like I think they definitely borrowed a lot from Shawn Mendes here, and it's kind of infused with like a Fall Out Boy sound, like you said. Like even like it's got a little bit of like Fall Out Boy's "I Don't Care" going on. You know,
yeah,
just like
totally.
that like stomping nature you say of it. They do not sound like the same band at all. They are
no.
a total
new
different
band.
Vessel.
The pivot is real,
you know,
man.
It's not even a pivot. This is a hard reset. You know what I mean?
What's pop punk, man? Like
yeah,
what?
no, yeah, right.
Yeah. We don't like guitars.
Are we on board with this band's transition into like a somber, you know, Spotify core pop band, which is like what these songs are, you know?
Hell yeah, dude. Right. Like as long as they just, that's the problem with all of these pivots is that they're not bangers. That's right. What it comes down to. And I think Five Sauce are actually putting out legitimate banger contender songs.
Definitely. And they're having, you know, like, Want You Back's a hit right now. It's getting played on radio.
Yeah.
And this song looks like it could follow in the footsteps. But yeah. Let's move on to our next story. Oh, God. Okay, so I Prevail are apparently working with Travis Barker.
Dude,
who isn't working with Travis?
Who
Barker?
Isn't in the studio Seriously. Right now with my man, who, Travis?
That guy, he's a legend. Shouts to Travis. Like, legend, icon, hard worker, overcame so much. A fucking plane crash.
Mm-hmm.
He was burned alive. And he's still out here making music as much. Dude just likes making music, likes playing drums.
Like, I don't think he's never not in the studio with someone.
From XXX to like Young Thug to like, you know,
name he's got a project with a dude band. From Limp Bizkit right now that he's in the studio with.
Which guy? Is it Wes?
Yeah, it is. Yep.
Oh my
yes,
God.
Yeah, straight up.
He's every. Remember when he was with From First to Last with making the new From First to Last song?
Yeah. Like, I mean,
dude,
he's in there with like, Lil Aaron. He's buddy-buddy with Feldman all over the place, all these different projects. He's playing with The Fever.
Listen,
like, get out of here, man.
But, oh, yeah, he's in The Fever. He's got another band. Like, let's not even talk about, like, that secret cabal of Travis Barker, John Feldman. You know, there's an underground sort of, like, little clique of musicians who are kind of making their own moves, and Travis Barker is one of them. And
absolutely.
John Feldman's in that group.
Absolutely.
But, yeah. I Prevail, do we care about the new album? Like, I don't. If you have anything to say, Tyler, go ahead.
I mean, I think that the next chapter of I Prevail is important in the overall standing of Fearless Records and where they stand in the current major label market, because I have no confirmation, no sources to back this up, but I really kind of feel like Concord, because Concord owns Fearless and Razor and Tie. And Razor and Tie, like Starset, just made the transition over to Fearless. And we had this conversation around the Under Oath album. But Under Oath's on rock radio. I Prevail's on rock radio. Starset has gotten a radio push. And I'm sure with the next cycle, we'll get a stronger radio push.
No, yeah. Starset did well on radio. And that's the band they Fearless. Concord moved from Razor and Tie, which they also bought.
So
Fearless.
It really feels like Fearless is, like Concord is trying to make Fearless the next cool, edgy, young rock radio label. I'm super interested to see, like, kind of the success of that potential pivot for a label really depends on the success of their artists. Under Oath, Rapture is still sitting at number 27 on rock radio, but I Prevail has had continual success, single after single, at rock radio. So
right.
I think this out, like, they are putting a lot
like,
of time,
I think
Lifelines
effort,
money,
is still
resources.
In the top 20, right?
I'm pretty sure
it hasn't fallen off. It's still.
I think
there.
It's at like 18 right now, and it was all the way up to 11.
It's been on the charts for a year.
Yeah, like, it's been there for a while. Yeah. I Prevail are just becoming staples at rock radio, and they're a young band doing it, and the success of this album has, you know, like Fearless has a lot riding on the success of the next chapter of I Prevail. So it'll be interesting to see what I Prevail does in the
band.
Future. Yeah.
They're the biggest band. They're bigger than Pierce now.
Absolutely.
Okay. Real quick. Did you see Fall Out Boy play on the Late Late Show with James Corden?
I
they
did.
They played Wilson, Expensive Mistakes.
I did. And I really wish I didn't. Because,
listen, fam. Why? Who is still pushing
what,
this? Like,
what is happening, dude?
They played Isn't church the single right now? Isn't that what's
no
at
one
radio?
Knows. I don't think literally no one knows.
Dude, that's the single at radio. And it's
no,
like...
They just added Last of the Real Ones to alt radio. Because church
what?
Fell off
No,
completely.
No, 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 no. Because is this... like, and is this going to be a single too, Wilson? Like,
it already was. I thought they already
sent
it.
That will be like 8 failed lead singles. They all bombed at radio. Like Young and Menace, Champion, Last of the Real Ones, Hold Me Tight, Church now. Like, all these songs have bombed at radio. It's just stop.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So church has completely fallen off alternative radio. It made it up to like 44-ish, which is like barely anything. And the Last of the Real Ones is sitting at 46 right now.
God forbid they get a pop hit too. You know, it's over. I mean, just stop with this album. I don't know why anyone is pushing any of these singles.
Mania, like, needs to be dead
can,
and buried. Like, it's
you can
time
go back and
on.
Listen to our Mania episodes, and we explain in thorough detail how this is one of the worst results ever. But man, just watching the band play this, it was just like watching money burn on screen. You know, like a big pile of money just lit on fire on the stage. That's all this was, watching this.
Patrick looks stressed, man. Like, I don't know if there's something there. They look completely uninspired. Like, they don't even look like they want to be there, man. Like, it's just, like, end the cycle, dude. End the cycle.
End it. All right, it's time to go, Tyler. But before we go, I got to hit you with something real quick. Unconfirmed reports that the Avril Lavigne album is 2 weeks away from completion and being released this year. Can she do it?
Wow. I I am incredibly excited, but I have strong, strong doubts. Like,
Best Damn Thing, 2007, Girlfriend, huge hit, right? I mean, that album was fucking massive. Goodbye Lullaby in 2011, like, she kind of had a moment again with What the Hell, but it wasn't as big.
Mm-hmm.
The last record totally flopped. Mm-hmm. We gotta face that. Even though I like Hello Kitty, I think it's a banger, the last record just totally flopped. Can she recover? Can she have a moment again?
It really depends. Based on the interviews that she's done, like, she did a couple interviews with, I think, Billboard last year and maybe Spin or something. I'm not sure on that. But she said that she was, quote unquote, going back to her roots. And she was talking roots more of, like, how she grew up singing in the church. So more like maybe gospel roots. I'm worried, man. Like, I'm concerned.
She feels really out of touch with me. Like, she doesn't seem like she knows that she's not that famous anymore. You know, like, she seems like she still thinks she's one of the biggest in the world.
She still thinks it's
like
2007,
she might not know who Ariana Grande is. You know, like, she's so out of touch. All right, that is it for the show this week, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. If you have any questions for the show, send them to notescene@gmail.com. If you enjoy the show, please take the time to go and rate and or review us on iTunes. Just hit those 5 stars, and we'll love you so much. All right, see you next week.